This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal alongside Mike Penna. We are here in our Lexington, Kentucky studio on this hot and humid Tuesday in May. We are actually just a few days away from the final leg of the Triple Crown. I hope you have all been listening to the exciting broadcast we bring you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can listen on Sirius 220, XM 206, or we make it really easy. You can find all of our shows, past and present, at our website, horseracingradio.net. And tonight, we bring you a very special guest. A 37-year career, still going strong. He hasn't missed a beat since 1979, with 4,174 wins, over $90 million in earnings. We welcome the great rider who just returned, in fact, from winning a Grade 3 last night in Texas. Thanks for joining us, CC Lopez. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. How are you guys?
Good, CC. How are you?
I'm great. I'm here in San Francisco with my boys and looking forward to riding with them on Friday.
So tell us about that, CC. You've been all over the country the past few days.
Yeah, kind of. I've been in 3 different time zones yesterday. I left New York around 6 o'clock in the morning. I got to Texas around 10 o'clock. And then I left there around 8 and got here to San Francisco at 12 o'clock. So, yeah, I'll be feeling jet lagged pretty soon.
Yeah, I have to tell you, CC, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how jockeys do it because I don't sleep well on a plane, and I think I'd just be exhausted. I'd be a zombie the whole time if I was a jockey.
Yeah, I don't sleep well on the plane either, but these things have to be done in order to stay competitive.
Of course. You got to follow the horses.
Yeah, hey, by the way, that win that you had last night in the Lone Star Handicap was for a good friend of mine and a former jockey, Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing, and I thought it was so cool when he told me that you were going to be the one riding the horse, so congratulations.
Thank you. He was really, really nice. They came in, they picked me up at the airport and everything. J.R. Pegram, who worked for me in at Monmouth and then a little bit in New York, was the one that actually got me the mount. So I want to thank all of those connections.
Well, it's funny. My wife and I don't have HRTV at our house, believe it or not. We have TVG, and they weren't showing it on TVG. So I had to go to my ExpressBet account and pull it up on ExpressBet, and I was trying to watch the race, and I was able to do it. The video on there was amazing, and we were cheering for you every step of the way. So that was so cool.
Yeah, they had a pretty good rainstorm out there, and I'm driving from the airport to the racetrack, and there's just water everywhere in Texas, though. They've gotten hit pretty good. There was even a delay before the race, and the track superintendent did an amazing job on the track.
Wow, that had to be a scary moment before the race, knowing that you might have just flown there for nothing.
Yeah, because they had called the races off, I think, like the day before that. They had gotten almost 3/4 of the way of the card, and they canceled the races.
Wow.
You know, but the cool part is you were in front every step of the way, so you didn't have to worry about getting all that mud and slop kicked back in your face. That had to be a big advantage.
Well, it always is. My belief or philosophy in riding these horses for the last 36 or 37 years has been to give them the best chance to win. And to me, that's you know, get them to the lead. There's no traffic. You set your own pace and, you know, keep the dirt out of their face.
How many sets of goggles will a jockey wear on a night like that, Cece?
Well, it all depends on the individual, but I've seen guys like Johnny Velasquez go out with as many as 6 or 7 goggles. I've only ever ridden with 3 the most. And my valet yesterday, when he asked me how many I wanted, I told him 3. He said, "Are you sure? Even going a mile in the 16th? I said, "Don't worry about nothing. I'm not going to get dirty. I'm going right to the front.
Cece, it's funny. I remember when I shipped out east, I don't remember exactly what track it was. I think Monmouth Park, maybe. But I believe it was my valet. Someone I was talking to said, they said, watch Cece. Don't let him get to the front. You won't pass him. You're not going to pass him down the stretch. You like the lead.
It's not a bad reputation to have, because usually when you're in the race, you know, it doesn't matter what I'm sitting on. They're always counting on me being on the lead or close to the pace. So it works a lot of times in my favor.
What's the key to winning on the front end, Cece?
I try to not get in their way, really. Again, a lot of it depends on the horse itself. But I always take a nice long hold on them. I let them get comfortable and keep them breathing. I think breathing is definitely the key to any speed horse or any other sport where speed is demanded of.
What's your trick to getting those horses out of the gate so well?
Part of the trick is to trust that the animal wants to stay on his feet. I always break on a loose lane, rein, and when he breaks, you know, you got to let him get his head out there. And I just let him zip.
So, Cece, you just mentioned earlier, to go backwards a little bit, you're at Golden Gate currently, and you said you will be riding with your sons. Is that correct?
That's correct. I ride here Friday with a son on either side of me when we leave the gate.
Wow.
How cool is that? What's that like for you as a dad?
It's actually pretty cool because I've ridden with both of them at one time or another, but not together. I've had the really good fortune of being able to ride with my father, my brothers, my cousin, which is still currently riding at Monmouth, J.C. Ferrer. And it's an experience unlike any other. I spend some part of the race worrying about where they are and hope that they don't get in any trouble. And the other half worrying about how I'm going to beat them.
I was going to ask you if you're tougher on them or easier on them.
When they're out on the racetrack, to me, they're all competitors. And I'll never live it down if I let one of them beat me.
No, that's what, Eric and David, right?
Eric and David. David is doing sensationally out here in Golden Gate Field since he came out. And Eric is just getting started. He's getting to know some of these people here. So hopefully it'll translate into a good meet for him.
What kind of advice do you give to them, Cece, from a dad and from a jockey perspective? What do you tell them?
Well, I've been telling my son David every time I talk to him to save his money.
Good advice.
Yeah, it's really good advice. And David is still learning. He's only rode maybe 300 or 400 horses. And he calls me often. And I watch the replays with him, which back when I started, you couldn't do that. Now with the advantage of you know, all the websites and computer and internet and carrying on, you know, it's easy for me to access the races if he thinks he messed up a race or if he thinks he needs some advice and what to do with a particular situation. I can look it up, I can see it, I can tell him. Eric is a good rider in his own right, might be better than all of us. And he doesn't really need much advice, although the same would apply to him when he has a bug.
You know, so often in sports, and I remember when I was growing up playing baseball, CC, I would, some people would say, you know, this kid's a natural, or this kid has to work hard to get what he wants. How about with your boys? Are they more naturals? Are they a little bit different where they have to work a little bit harder? How would you describe them?
I would say that they were both natural. I think all athletes are deficient somewhere, and they need to work harder at some things than other athletes. But for the most part, athletes usually are naturally good at whatever it is that they do. It's part of the reason why they choose it. But both of my kids, including my oldest son, which is a police officer in Bloomfield, when he started his career, he started in the mounted police, and they all ride, and they all ride well.
Well, how about you? Were you more of a hard worker, or were you more of a natural?
I almost hate to say this because it might sound funny, in lieu that my kids have to kind of stand in my shadow a little bit. But when I started riding, my father was a very, very good race rider. And I really had to work at what I wanted to do. I wasn't really that good. I had to practice a lot. And all I ever really wanted to be was half as good as my father, because my father, I thought in my eyes anyway, was so great. And I worked very, very hard. And when I started riding, the same kind of criticism or advice that I give my kids, I also got from my father. And a lot of it was, you know, I wasn't hitting the horse left-handed, or I wasn't hitting them correctly, or I wasn't pushing correctly. And I would work very, very hard consciously. You know, I'd be riding, I'm going, okay, well, my dad told me to do this, and I need to do it this way. And after a little while, it just becomes second nature to you.
Right, you were at one time in their shoes, and your father, Carlos Lopez Sr., he rode for more than 40 years. Tell us about your dad.
Well, my dad is a great race rider. He accomplished quite a bit. He only won 1,000 races, I think. A lot of his career was spent in Puerto Rico, where he's legendary. He was also a very good gait and speed rider, well-liked by everyone, one hell of a sense of humor. And it was sometimes difficult to have to overcome that, because a lot of times I would listen, they tell me, well, you're not as good as your father, or, you know, you need to be more like your father. And I always tried to do those things. Some of his biggest wins were at the Jersey Shore, when he won the Haskell with thanks to Tony, upset Amber Pass. He won the Meadowlands Cup with Great Norman, which paid $364. He did quite well in Gulfstream when he was riding for Rinaldo Nobles in Due Process. He's won the Don Handicap, I think, a half a dozen times, the Gulfstream Handicap. Oh, yeah, he's pretty well-versed.
Did he want you to be a jockey?
I don't think he really wanted me to be a jockey. I think he almost discouraged it. But I didn't do well in school, if I might be so bold to admit that. And I ended up quitting school, and I went to the racetrack anyway, whether he wanted me to go or not. And, but once he saw me on horseback and he could see the potential, then, you know, he went along with it.
Well, you had brothers who followed the same path, yes?
My brothers? I mean, yes, they all did. One's riding now, still in Canterbury. He's in Minnesota now. But all my brothers have ridden at one point or another.
So what's that like? Is there a sibling rivalry? It kind of in a good way, though, a fun sibling rivalry?
It was kind of funny. Maybe 15 years ago, we were all in a race together. It was Carlos Lopez Sr., it was Chuck Lopez, it was Carlos. Well, back in those days, they had to differentiate Carlos E. Lopez, which is one of my brothers, and then the other one was Carlos Lopez. So out of like seven horses, there were four, you know, Carlos Lopez, five Carlos Lopez, and Sam Bolmides was the steward at the time. And he came down and he said, okay, which one of you is Carlos E. Lopez? I can't figure it out.
That's outstanding. That's great. So what was that? Tell me about that race.
Because he was genuinely confused. But
who won that race?
My dad did.
Of course.
Oh, come on. You let him win.
No, are you kidding me? The whole idea was to beat the master and was unable.
Oh, I can imagine. If you're in there with your dad, you want to beat him more than anything, right?
Well, yeah, kind of. And to show him that all his teachings were done correctly.
Yeah, I guess Eric and David will be thinking the same thing on Friday.
Yeah, if they don't already.
What's the best advice that you ever received from your dad, Cece?
I guess the best advice I ever received from him, and he had been through quite a bit in his career, was try not to make the same mistakes I did. And what I mean by that is either or in the sport or in life. And I got to watch a lot of his ups and downs and pitfalls. And that's the same advice that I give my kids. Try to avoid certain situations, certain problems that will later plague you or make it difficult for you to continue.
So it's all in the family. And Cece, tell us about, I guess you grew up in Brooklyn, yes?
No, actually, I was only born there. I was raised in Puerto Rico.
Really?
Yeah, and then we lived there for about 10 years while my father was riding there. And then we came to the States, and my father started riding at a track called Liberty Bell.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
And wow. And went on to Garden State, and from there they went to Atlantic City. But I would say that my teen years were all raised in the Cherry Hill, New Jersey area.
When was that moment that you decided, hey, this is what I want to do for a living, there's nothing else I want to do? When was that moment?
Well, I think it's always been... You know, a lot of people kid me when I say this, but my first love was to be an astronaut.
Really?
My hero is Captain Kirk. And, but I always went to the races with my father, and they would have like steak races in every Sunday in El Comandante. And my dad was usually sitting on the favorite or the second choice. And when he'd win and get to the winner's circle, I'm in a bunch of my dad's pictures there, and took an appreciation for the sport early on.
I read a fun fact about you, Cece, that your number one bucket list item is that you want to race in a NASCAR event. I guess you have that need for speed.
Yeah, that's one of my problems. I'm a big car buff. I like cars. I like fast cars. When they're not fast, I soup them up so that they go faster. And I'm a regular at Englishtown Raceway Park here in Englishtown, New Jersey.
Huh. Wow. So you've never gotten the actual chance to be in a NASCAR, what do they call them, sprint cars? Is that what they are?
I guess that's what they're called, but no, I never have, and I would love to.
How many speeding tickets have you ever had?
Well, I'll give you the short version. I, at one point or another, had 96 points on my license.
Wow.
They take them off 3 points at a time. And it's, I think I'm down to like the last six.
But, hey, you mentioned Star Trek and Captain Kirk. Have you ever had the opportunity to meet William Shatner? Because last I heard, he was a pretty big fan of horse racing.
I would love to meet him. My God, it would be like a dream come true. Yes, I know he's a avid horse. I think he's got, what do they call them horses? I mean, he's got show horses. He's got all kinds of horses. He's got a huge farm in California. And, yeah, I would love to meet him. And not just to be geeky with him, but, you know, just to spar with him a little bit, share ideas.
Wow. Well, he has a farm here, I believe. Yes, yes.
Yeah, he does. He did. Yeah, he used to. Yeah, it's the now it's Chestnut Farm in Versailles. But it was, before it was purchased by Michael House, it was owned by William Shatner. Yeah.
Huh. Well,
yeah, he's a big fan of the sport. Hopefully you'll get an opportunity to catch up with him one day, Cece.
I heard at one time he did have thoroughbreds, and I guess he used to go to Santa Anita often. Since then, he's gotten out of the business. But I would love to meet him. It would be great.
You have another bucket list item right there.
Yeah, right?
All right, Cece. Well, let's get a little serious here, I suppose. I read somewhere that your favorite horse, I don't know if this probably still does not stand, but a horse you rode in the past, and I'm sure I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Aromanches?
Aromanches.
Oh, Aromanches.
Yeah, it's Italian. There's an Italian town in Italy. That's his name, Aromanches.
Why was that horse your favorite?
Well, when I started riding him, seemed like we hit it off right from the start. And I had the privilege of riding him, I would say, about 20, 25 odd times. And he wasn't really a hard horse to ride, but he had a paralyzed jaw, which prevented him from chewing his food. On top of that, he couldn't breathe well. So if there was ever a time I didn't ride him and the rider didn't understand right away what was happening, he would just choke up and stop riding. And I would always let him leave the gate running. I think he started to go to lead when I started to ride him, just so that I wouldn't get in his way of breathing. And that went on to be a beautiful and beneficial relationship between he and I. I love white horses. They're my favorite horse. I won my very first race on a horse named Foolish Tracy that was also white like he was. And I got to win 17 races on him, 11 of them in a row. He won for everybody and anybody that ever had him. It was claimed often between the $25,000 and the $50,000 range. And I loved him. And I genuinely think, you know how people say, well, you think he knows it's you up there? Well, I don't know if a lot of horses generally know that it's any one particular rider riding him. But with him, I think it definitely applied. He always knew it was me on top of him.
Jockey Cece Lopez joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Cece, he definitely, this Aromanches definitely knew the way you rode him was the correct way. Obviously, he won 17 races. Who else would make that list?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
What other horses would make that list of the favorites you've ridden?
Got Your Gold will definitely be among my favorites as well. In my mind, I think he's the best horse I ever rode. I was second on him in the Breeders' Cup. I won the Salvatore Mile on him a bunch of times. And he was also another one that was a match made in heaven. just a flat out runoff, and everybody would that rode them before would either try to raid them or whatever. I would just let them go as far and as fast as he wanted to go, and he did, and I won a bunch of races on them.
Yeah, I remember that day at Monmouth in 2007. You mentioned the Breeders' Cup and the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. That was our first national broadcast here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, CC, I remember it rained cats and dogs that day. It was an absolute soaker. The track was a mess, and Gotcha Gold just dug in every step of the way. And you just had to be beside yourself with the way he performed in that spot.
He ran so well. And, you know, I was really fortunate that that year's Breeders' Cup was at Monmouth. I held the home crowd and the home court advantage. He liked the track. He loved the flop. And in my mind, going into that race, you know, I thought that he would run the race of a lifetime for him. And he did. As a matter of fact, it took Corinthian's very best race to beat him that day.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. It was quite a performance by both of those horses, really. You know, you mentioned the home court. Is there such a thing as a home field advantage for a jockey?
I think there is. I mean, anytime you're riding steady at the track and you're riding with the players in and out all day long, day after day, I think it definitely helps. But when you're going from one track to another, like I watched the races all day yesterday at Lone Star just to make sure that I knew where I was going to need to be on the racetrack. That applies more than ever at a place like Belmont where the track is not the usual racetrack. It's not a mile track. It's a mile and a half. So if you're not paying attention at Belmont, you can get lost there.
Really? See, that's interesting because I always thought, okay, I know it's a big sweeping track, but you know, an eighth pole is an eighth pole, a quarter pole is a quarter pole, but you can, there are ways that a jockey that's not familiar with that surface can get lost.
Yeah, there is, because if you're not paying attention, like if you're unfamiliar with the track and you're not paying attention, like you just got done mentioning, okay, you look to see where you are physically on the racetrack. You'll go into the turn thinking, it's just like any other racetrack. You're going through a 3/8 pole, and there's still almost 4.5 furlongs still to run. So that would make you move prematurely, which could cost you the race.
If you're not used to that, of course, it makes sense. You're used to a mile track. Say you're coming from Monmouth Park, you go to Belmont. It makes sense.
My father told me a story one time. He went to go ride at Belmont on the turf. And, you know, they have, like, two or three turf courses inside the Belmont racetrack. So they broke from that one chute that's right in front of the grandstand and went around the turn. And he was riding with a jock named Craig Perrette back in those days. They rode together that race, and they turned down the backside together. And I guess my father lost track of what the heck was going on. So he says to Craig, "Hey, Craig, where the heck are we?" And Craig answered back. He said, "Carlos, we still got 5/8 of a mile left to run." So I said, "Okay, thanks."
That's a great story.
We will continue our visit with jockey CC Lopez after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit Tito'sVodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the Bet America way.
Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.
And we're going to kick things off with trainer Graham Motion. Hall of Fame trainer Phil Mott here on Trainer Talk. Roger Atfield is going to be with us for the next half an hour. Carl Nasker, an honor to have him on the show tonight. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahey, nice enough to spend some time with us. I want to welcome Hall of Famer Bob Baffert to the program.
Trainer Talk, the biggest names in horse racing. Wednesdays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And always streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
And time now for your Jockey Talk 360 update. And to help us do that is CJ Johnson. CJ, big weekend for some of the riders around the country.
Oh, absolutely. It was a huge weekend in California, obviously, with all the stakes out at Santa Anita. Santa Anita's leading rider, Tyler Bays, right now, he had a huge weekend. He had five stakes mounts, won three of them, and got third and one for earnings of $330,000. You know, the veteran Gary Stevens had four stakes mounts, wins two of them, gets second in another. You know, the up-and-comer right now out in California is Flavian Pratt. I think he's third leading rider at Santa Anita right now, and he pulled it up, a huge upset on Never a Doubt in the Snow Chief with an amazing ride. Went off at a little over 41-1. It was a mile and an eighth on the turf. He broke from the eight post, and by the first turn, he was already on the rail saving ground. You know, he got Never a Doubt to settle behind horses and remained on the rail until the stretch. It looked like he had to steady a couple times getting shut off. Midway on the turn, he just took off the rail and found a seam between horses, held off Temple Keys, and returned $85.40 on a $2 win bet. So that was a Mike Pipey-trained horse, and he's 50% so far at the Santa Anita meet on Pipey horses, so that's one to look out for.
Yeah, big weekend for several riders. And looking ahead to the Belmont Stakes on Saturday, June 6th, several big-name riders still looking for that Belmont mount.
Yeah, we still aren't sure, you know, who's going to ride these Pletcher horses, where Velasquez and Castellano are going to go. And we're also waiting on the Dale Roman strength Keen Ice, waiting on that mount. But if you follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk, we will have, you know, those mounts as soon as they come up, and we'll let everyone know who's riding who.
And that is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 update here on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Around the far turn, and Gotcha Gold has put away Barcola. Gotcha Gold is three in front. Brother Bobby has moved into second now. Barcola is back to third. Then Master Command and Indy Wind, they're into the stretch. And Gotcha Gold has a three-length lead. Brother Bobby, second, trying to close the gap at the eight pole. And Master Command is a distant third behind Gotcha Gold and Chuck Lopez, who come to the wire, a five-length winner of the Island. It was Brother Bobby, second, Indy Wind got up for third, and then came Master Command.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigal, Mike Penna, joined tonight by jockey Cece Lopez. We just listened to the replay of Gotcha Gold in the Island Stakes in 2007. Cece, we just mentioned that horse, and what a match made in heaven you two were, as you said.
I did. It was always a thrill to ride him. Eddie Pleasa had done such a good job with him, and I think the best thing that he ever did was pair us up.
Yeah, he was a nice horse, and that effort in the Island was simply sensational. We talked about his effort in the Breeders' Cup and how good that was. It was, you know, incredible. I do want to ask you, though, Cece, since we're talking about some graded stakes races, about your first graded stakes win, which came in the Grade 3 Boiling Springs Handicap aboard a horse named Irish Joy. Take me back to that day.
That was a turf event, I believe. Arthur Appleton owned the horse. Larry Jennings trained the horse, and I was doing quite a bit of riding for those connections back in those days. And I had to beat a horse named First Approach for Jonathan Shepherd. She was like the big deal, the headliner of the race. And it was amazing to win that kind of race there. And that, back in those days, was a major, major racetrack. They called it the Big M.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. What an effort. And that had to be a huge thrill. Whenever you can crack through and win your first graded stakes, that day in the life of a jockey is just unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it can transform your career.
Did it make a difference for you?
I think that it did. I mean, those are milestones along the way that every rider should aspire to accomplish. So, yeah, I think it did, because I went on to be leading rider at Philadelphia Park that year, which was back then known as Keystone. And then I came back to Monmouth, and I held my own there, riding for John Ford, J.J. Kruppi, and a couple of those big-time trainers back in those days. So, yeah, I think it makes a difference. You need to do all those things.
What records do you still want to break? Milestones.
Well, I still need a grade one. That's probably my main priority right now. And I think I can achieve that still. As you well know, I was riding a pretty nice horse this winter named El Kabir. And I'm looking forward to somewhere along the line riding him again, perhaps in the fall in something like the Indiana Derby or the Pennsylvania Derby. And possibly he could give me my first grade one. I just picked up this horse in Texas. And I believe that he can also produce my grade one winner. He did a pretty nice horse yesterday in Tappet and Curve.
Yep.
So,
yeah, Majestic City.
Tappeture,
yeah. Yeah, Majestic and, City, he's a nice horse. And Cece, is he not the best-looking horse you've ever seen?
Who, Tappature or
no,
my horse?
No, your horse, Majestic City.
Stunning, absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a very, very good-looking horse. And his performance is nothing short of amazing.
Yeah, he ran so big, and let's hope that maybe he is the one to give you that elusive grade one. It's hard to think about Cece Lopez with all the success you've had and all the 4,000-plus winners and all the graded stakes races that you've yet to win that grade one. But it's coming. Just ask Kerwin Clark. It's coming.
Well, I'm trying. No one could be trying harder than me.
Knocking on the door.
You know, I want to go back to a name you just mentioned. You mentioned El Kabir, and this was a horse that, Cece, you and I talked about this horse this past spring when you joined me on one of our other programs, and
yeah,
we were hoping that he was going to be the one to win the Wood Memorial for you and get you over that hump in a grade one. And you know, quite frankly, you did absolutely nothing wrong with the horse. You win the Jerome, you win the Gotham, you run very well in the Wood Memorial, and all of a sudden you're replaced before the Kentucky Derby by Calvin Burrell, and you don't get a chance to ride in your first Derby. How does something like that affect a rider mentally?
Well, I've been here before. It's not the first horse that I've been looking forward to ride and get replaced because they want to make a change or they feel that I didn't ride him correctly. So in my mind, you know, I had still, from the very first day that I rode him, was always thinking in the back of my head that it was always a possibility. The fact that I got to riding this as long as I did was good all by itself. I don't know if I was really disappointed because I knew what was going to happen. There was probably only one right answer. You know, he had a win. And I just took it with a little grain of salt. You know, Mr. Zion needs to do whatever he needs to do to improve his chances. And I pacified myself looking at it this way. If Elkabir is the patient and he's going for a major operation, which would be the Kentucky Derby, you would want at least three opinions, meaning three qualified riders that you had to pick from. And in their mind, they probably thought Calvin Burrell was the best doctor for the operation. And you couldn't fault anybody for doing or thinking that way. I was actually more upset or disappointed that he was scratched due to an abscess in his foot. But I took it with a little grain of salt, and I tried not to overreact, because a lot of riders would. And I hate to close that door, because they didn't have to ride me on them in the first place, and they did. And I want to keep that door open, because I like that horse very much, and I genuinely think that I almost enhanced his performances as I rode him through the series. And he had a habit of kind of switching on and switching off, and I was able to figure out what got him started again. So I'm looking forward to riding him again. I really am.
What a great attitude to have. Cece, you mentioned that you had been in that position before, as most jockeys have been. Do you remember a specific time where that happened and it really got to you and you had to learn how to change that attitude to what it is today?
Well, I think it happened more times than not. And for all the wrong reasons. Meaning that if you're going to cause stink, it's got to be over a horse like Elkabir. Can't be over some Blauens horse that's just going through his condition. And I did that a lot early on in my career. And all you do is close the door. The guy doesn't want to ride you no more. Eventually what happens in these situations is that whoever's being replaced ends up getting fired anyway. And if you've done nothing to upset that, instead of, you know, you just wish them luck, you know, okay, great, find me another one or we'll get back together somewhere along the line, you're going to end up on them. But if you say something stupid or you make a fuss, it's just such a waste of time.
No, that makes sense. As I said, it's not easy to have that kind of an attitude, but what a great one to have. I told Mike here in the studio, I remember a time in my career, I won a race on a horse and then was replaced. And you never know what's going on in the minds of the connections. But like you said, you have to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. When I was riding for Forbes early on, I was riding a really, really nice horse called the Cool Virginian, which I got to ride in the Haskell later on in the year against the likes of Spectacular Bid and Lord Avey. I got to ride with some of my other heroes, like Billy Shoemaker and Georgie Velasquez. And leading up to that first year when I rode, because I didn't ride in the Haskell till the following year, they took me off of him and they put Donald Brunfield on him. And I'm going, like, I can't freaking believe it. Why would they do this to me? I was their contract rider, too, to go along with all of it. I'm going, like, I must be doing something or I did something to be penalized for them. So it was, like, really hard for me to understand why they were taking me off the horse. But then I got to ride him in the Haskell, and he was 30. He ran his eyeballs out that day. And made everything better.
Yeah, but you know, those kind of experiences, CC, and listening to you talk, you're a true veteran rider now. And I know that you may not have handled the situation the same way back in the early days when you were just getting started, but there's no substitute for experience. And just curious about some of the lessons you've learned along the way. What if you're talking to a new rider today, what some of the advice that you're going to pass along to him or to her?
Well, the first thing I always tell them, and I tell my kids this as well, is, you know, if an older rider comes to you and he thinks you're doing something wrong, you should definitely listen. Always listen. Never answer back or think that you know more than someone that's trying to help you. I think that's the biggest advice that I could give any young rider. Always watch. Watch the races, watch the good riders ride, watch what they do. If you find yourself in a particular situation and you can't figure it out, come ask me. I'll tell you. I'll tell you how to figure it out. And don't be afraid to ask questions. It might seem silly. The question might seem silly, but it's never silly when it comes to thoroughbred racing and the safety, because if he does something wrong and he can't figure it out, it could cause an accident. So I always tell him, you know, listen and ask lots of questions.
Right. Some young riders assume that you don't have their best interests at heart because you're all competition. But as you said, everyone's out there with, you know, the risk of going down on the line. And in order to prevent that, it's best to educate the young riders.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys that come up now, and for the same reason that you just got done mentioned, they don't ask any questions, or a lot of them, they just have an attitude because they're winning races and they think they have all the answers. In those cases, I always tell them, it's not me that needs the experience. I already have it. It's not me that's going to get hurt. It's not me that's not going to win because I did something wrong. It is always going to be you if you don't listen or if you don't let me help you.
Jockey CC Lopez joining us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. CC, take us through a typical day in your life, although I know you've been all over the country the past couple of days. But what's a typical day for you?
Typical day starts around 4:30 in the morning. I live in Farmingdale, New York, which is about 25 miles from Belmont, east of Belmont. I run downstairs, make myself some coffee, and go back upstairs, put my gear on, come back downstairs, take my coffee, jump in the car, and drive an hour and a half to Monmouth Park. Once I get there, I cover the track from head to toe. If I have some workers that day, you know, I'll get on them. I usually can't come back home because I'm so damn far away from the track. So I'll go into the jocks room. If I have any weight to pull that day, I'll pull the required weight that I need to pull. And then if I have a little bit of time, I'll try to take a little nap before the races start.
Well, I don't know how you do it, CC. I couldn't be a jockey for that reason. I mean, just the pace that you have to keep up with in order to be a top rider. And like you said in the beginning of this interview here tonight, that's what you have to do if you want to be competitive at a high level, like you're able to do year in and year out.
I might add that that's without a morsel of food, just the coffee. That's all I stick in my body in the day.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't do it now.
I don't need to go
after work. Yeah, I like to eat too much. There's no way I could do it now.
Well, I like to eat as well, except I can't do it. I'll be out of a job if I do that.
How is that for you? Can you eat pretty much anything you want, or do you have to watch that?
If I know I'm tacking light, I try to watch what I eat. But generally, I can eat just about anything. I really don't get that heavy. By yesterday, I think I only pulled like 2 pounds to ride a majestic city. But 2 pounds is really nothing compared to a lot of riders that absolutely struggle to ride.
Yeah, you spent a few minutes. About 5 or 6 minutes ago, you were talking about the advice you would give to young riders in this game. And just kind of want to get your thoughts on some of the young riders we're seeing today. Take your sons out of the equation, of course, and talk about some of the other young riders that have really caught your eye.
Well, I think among the finest riders, they're all actually, I'm more familiar with the New York rider, the young talent there, and guys like Jose Lascano, Irad Ortiz,
yeah.
Jose Ortiz, which I like very, very much as a rider and a person, are all very, very talented. I mean, amazing. Manny Franco as well. I'm trying to think of who else was in that corner. Angel Arroyo has come a long, long way from his day at Philadelphia Park. And they're going places if they continue to do the things that they're doing.
How much has riding races changed since you broke into the sport in the late 70s?
Oh, my God. It's almost like night and day. And anybody that's going to listen to this broadcast probably agree how much it's changed. You know, no longer do you really see the multitude of 40-horse outfits that were at the backside of Monmouth Park. I mean, that first row, as you walk down the backside, it was a who's who of 40-horse outfits. Ford, Sonny Hine, Bay Perkin, Bose Bond, Buddy Lettman, and down the line you go. And, you know, I think a lot of these guys have monopolized the number of horses that they have, and I think in part that's decreased the number of horses racing in a particular race. If you got 4 or 5 horses in a race, well, do you run them all, or do you, you know, let one for each time the race comes up? And just the way things are done as well, I think there was more pride back in those days about how people care of their horses or even rode their horses, their appearances, like when they come to the races. Like I remember, used to have to come dressed in a suit. A lot of these guys now show up for a $1 million race and they're in, you know, jumpsuits and carrying on. I mean, I realize that a lot of people, you know, they ride, they probably won't ever see them, but you're supposed to show up to the races dressed.
Yeah.
And you don't see that anymore.
Cece, you also mentioned you rode for Forbes. And you were a contract rider. Tell us about what that meant back in the day and how that's changed.
Well, before, even a little bit before my time, you didn't get to ride unless you rode for an outfit, unless you had a contract. That started almost right around the time where I started riding, where you had certificate riders, meaning that you could hold your own contract and still ride. All you had to do was keep track of how many winners you had, and as you did, you know, you lost your bug allowance. But back when my father started riding, nobody rode without a contract. As a matter of fact, my father's contract was with a guy named Herbst Jacob, and he ended up, Tommy Hurt ended up buying his contract from Herbst Jacob, and that's how my father got started. But nobody rode without a contract prior to, give or take, 1975.
Yeah, it's definitely changed in that respect. There's no doubt about it. You know, Cece, part of the proceeds from this particular show are donated back to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and that's become the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, and we'll encourage everybody to go to pdjf.org to learn more. But one of the aspects of riding races is that safety issue, and I'm just curious, have there been advancements over the years that you've seen that are helping riders now from a safety perspective?
Well, as far as equipment?
Yeah.
I think the vest is very, very helpful in a lot of situations. I'm not particularly crazy with the bucket-style helmet I'm wearing nowadays to protect my head. They look ugly, and I frankly don't think that they're that much safer than my old Saratoga or Caliente. I went down a spill one time and banged my head with my old Caliente, and while it was cracked, nothing happened to my head. I see some of these guys go down now with these safety helmets, and it's supposed to shatter. But, I mean, a lot of times there are head injuries due to the helmet, and I'm just not a fan of the new helmet.
Are you required to wear that helmet, Cece, or do you have any choice?
I am required at Monmouth Park in New York to wear those helmets. I know my kids in Sheriff Paradise didn't have to wear them. And in Philadelphia, you could choose whichever style helmet you want to wear. But in those tracks that are mandated, like here at Lone Star, I had to bring my bucket-style helmet to ride, and or else they wouldn't let me ride.
Wow.
I remember a lot of other riders who had used the Calientes. They didn't like the new mushroom heads, as we called them.
Oh, I hate them. They're so ugly. I feel like a zoo on the Flintstones.
Cece Lopez on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. All right, Cece, just a couple of minutes left. We always like to end by asking riders what other hobbies they have. What else, if you're not at the racetrack, do you enjoy doing? So what does Cece Lopez enjoy doing?
I like washing my car. I could spend my car could be absolutely clean, and I could still spend 4 hours with it vacuuming, waxing it, figuring out what dirty corner I haven't gotten to it. Last time I tried to wash it for 4 hours. So for me, it's very therapeutic. I get to think about why things are the way they are. So I enjoy it. I find it very, very relaxing.
Next time you're in Kentucky, my wife and I have a couple of cars in our driveway. You're more than welcome to come over and contemplate the troubles
too.
Of the world while you clean them.
Well, if you ever got to watch one, see one of my jobs, you would absolutely trust me with one of your cars.
I'm embarrassed of mine at the moment.
I clean them from head to toe. There's not a spot I can't get out of the car.
Cece, what's your favorite track you've ridden at?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Your favorite racetrack?
That would be Monmouth Park.
Monmouth Park, Jersey Shore.
I love Monmouth Park. It's always been home. It always will be home. And anytime I'm away from it, I miss it. The only other track that I really like is Aqueduct. I know that it's in the wintertime and it's cold and carrying on. But when I'm away from Monmouth Park, that's my second home.
I heard you refer it to as your domain. Is that yes? Is that right?
Yes. I am the king of speed.
All right, Cece. Well, I'm afraid we are about out of time. Once again, this show seems to fly by, and it's over before we know it. Mike?
Yeah, thanks for taking the time, Cece. Always great to catch up and great to hear your story as well, and going to look forward to seeing you in action up the road, and we'll wish you safe travels and safe trip on the racetrack to you and to your sons and your brothers as well.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be on the show. Anytime.
CC, you're the best. We appreciate it.
Thank you, CC.
All right, now.
Thank you. My pleasure.
How great is he?
Unbelievable.
How great. I mean, just one of those guys that's easy to cheer for.
Yes.
Because he's so genuine.
Genuine guy.
You wrote
great
with him
attitude.
A little bit, right?
I did. Just nicest guy in the world. As competitive as he is on the racetrack, just the nicest guy in the world off of the track.
Yeah, and of course, if people missed any of this, they can go to our website.
Horseracingradio.net and tune into Sirius 220 XM 206. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Mike Penna.
Thanks. That was fun.
Yes.
It was a good time.
Yes.
All right. Well, all right, we're out. We'll talk to you next time on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.